Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is presented by the Writers and Illustrators of the Future. They've been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. We're going to welcome back award-winning author Lee Murray, who's probably laughing right now. Hi, Lee!
I certainly am. It's not a good start to the decade when you can't remember your own name, Sherry.
I got tongue-tied.
Happy New Year to you, and it's lovely to be here first up on your show this year. It's really lovely. I'm so pleased to be invited back. Thank you for asking me.
Happy New Year to you too. We're in the 20s.
We are the roaring 20s.
The second roaring 20s, literally.
Is it going to be a roar for you? Has it started off with a hiss and a roar, Sherry? Tell me.
Actually, it started really good. I went to my very first film festival, the Palm Springs Festival. Grew up in L.A., been around movies, acted in movies, knew actors my whole life, never been to a film festival.
That's crazy. That's amazing. It must have been a real eye-opener to go for your first time. So any highlights?
It was I went to see Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears. It was supreme.
Oh, yes, you're a big fan.
Yes. And the Nathan Page, S.C. Davis were there, the director, Tony Tills, Roger Lancer, the cinematographer, Deb Cox, the writer, and Fiona Egger, the producer, were all there. And I actually got to meet Nathan. I've interviewed him 4 times now, and I finally met him in person.
Oh, that's fantastic. How nice to actually meet in person. So was he as you expected, his mannerisms, and was he warm and lovely? Was he what you expected?
He was exactly what I expected. He was the same. He was the exact person I talked to. Nice and funny and warm and sweet. Just a nice guy. Just a really nice, down-to-earth man.
Oh, that's actually really nice to know that when you meet someone as famous as that they're actually really genuine people and not necessarily a kind of a facade or a brand. I think that's that must have been what a way to start the year, Sherry.
I know, and I mean it was only for a few minutes because they had to rush off for like press stuff for after the screening, but it was great. I wanted to talk to the producers, but they were busy talking to someone else, so I was happy just talking to Nathan, to be honest, but I wanted to talk. Essie had to leave because she was going to Australia, so she wasn't there. And so I talked to Nathan, and I talked to Roger Lancer at a pre-party. He's a cinematographer, and he's got quite a history. He worked with a lot of in England and America. He's been all over the world. Very interesting man too. So I mean, it was really cool. I wanted to talk to Tony Tills, but every time I walked over toward him, he was also at the party. Every time I walked over to him, he was talking about the movie, and I hadn't seen it yet, and I didn't want to be spoiled, so I kept walking away.
Yeah, spoilers. Yes, it can really spoil your experience of the actual movie when you've heard a lot of talk about it beforehand. That's true.
So I did get I saw him. I mean, I was like as close as I am to my computer right now, but I never saw him.
Well, that's a good way to start the decade. So, and the rest of the film festival, did you see anything else of note that you think viewers and listeners should be making sure they get along to see?
Well, the thing is that I was only able to go one day. I was only able to go Sunday. And so I got to see that. I only got to make that movie. But they had some good stuff. They had Essie's other movie, Baby Teeth, was there. There was Robert De Niro's and Martin Scorsese's movie was there.
Mm-hmm.
lot of big films. Laura Dern's new movie was there. Who else? Oh, Brad Pitt and, you know, I'm really excited and my brain is freezing.
Well, yeah, it sounds like it was quite the event. What else have you got planned? Have you got you must be for this year. What else have you got planned in terms of it? I know, because I want to know what you're doing this year. You always have such a great program. I just want to know. It's the beginning of the year. It's a good time to ask.
Well, I've got two books coming out.
Wow! Congratulations.
Called Sandy and the Children of the Light, which is a preteen sci-fi book. And it's based on something, it didn't happen to me because it's really fantasy, but fantasy sci-fi. But it was based on something that happened to me when I was a kid. I was always a new girl. And I moved to Ohio, and it's based from my feelings as a new girl in Ohio and how I escaped. There was like this wooded area that was near, right across the street from our house, and then you went underneath you had to cross a bridge over the road, and then when you got to the other side, you went underneath the fence and you were in the golf course. It was like this wonderland. Especially to me, because it was very, very Midwest when I came from California, so it's very different. Oh, creek, that's what the word I couldn't think of. It's a creek.
Nice.
And that's what the story is based on.
But you've given it a sci-fi fantasy context. That's interesting that you should be moving into that kind of area, that genre, because, of course, you know that's a genre I love. So
yeah.
I'm excited to see what you've done with it. That's quite a deviation for you, because you've been really focused on children's books and memoir. So this is quite different. It's a sort of like a... what do you call it? Hyperfiction, where you sort of take something from real life and you're inspired by it, and then you write something that's fictional around it. So that sounds really exciting. So that's the first one. You said you had two books?
Yeah, but I did write another time travel story, so I'm not totally out. I wrote that.
You've done some of that for the plays, right? Some of the plays have had more kind of supernatural fantasy sort of feel to them as well, you know, in terms of the plot devices. So I know you have done that, but this is still, you know, YA fantasy is quite a different genre for you still.
Oh, yeah, this is more hard, even though it's a children's book, well, teen book. It's more like, because it's like the age I was at the time, which was 9 years old,
right.
So it's... But my time travel book, Fantasy Time Inc., that was an adult book. That wasn't a kid's book. But I do have another myth book that's called the Catherine Dorsey Mysteries, and it's a mystery book, but it has a couple of little interesting bends that I can't tell because it's a complete spoiler. That's very little fantasy in with the mystery, sort of, and romance, which you're not supposed to put in a mystery, but I thought, you know, it came out.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, that's what they always say, hardline mystery. But if you read Agatha Christie, it's full of romance, so...
yeah. I mean, and you know, they're funny genres, aren't they? Sort of romance, horror, and comedy, because they infiltrate all the other genres. So you can have a horror, you know, you can have a historical fiction that's romantic, or you could have a historical fiction that was... you know, full of horror and haunting and gothic elements. So they're kind of odd genres, those ones, where they can cross over a number of genres, so they blend quite well. So, you know, the idea of supernatural and mystery, well, that's something, you know, that I've explored myself, you know, with the Path of Ra series that I write with Dan Raybart's my collaborator, and so we've looked at, you know, supernatural and superimposing that on a sort of hardcore futuristic mystery. And I think people are looking for the things that are innovative and new, and they like, you know, so long as if it's well written, I think readers are really interested in seeing these cross genre type works. I think you know, there are no new stories, so it's always good to put a new spin on an old genre. So I think you're onto something.
Thank you. I love it. I love it. It's my first full on real old fashioned mystery I've ever written. So I've written mysteries that were like other bends to it, but this is more of the old fashioned golden age kind of a mystery, not a more modern type. And I kind of like writing it.
So when can we expect these releases out then?
I'd say Sandy will be coming out most likely at the beginning of March, and I think it will the mystery book probably won't be out until after like August, September.
Okay. Yeah, it's a lot of work putting together a book. You know, it always seems so seamless, doesn't it? You know, when you see people say, "Oh, my book's coming out," and then what readers don't understand is just how much goes on behind the scenes and how much preparation there is before you actually get that book out. And it's not just simply the writing; there's the editing and the, you know, all of that, the formatting and the publicity and all those sorts of things. It's really quite a process.
Well, they're both finished, they're both edited, but there's a lot, I mean, I have to get covers, I have to, you know, there's a lot of, the children's book has illustrations I need to, it's already done, but I need to set it into, because you know when they send you the illustrations, they're much bigger than the actual 8x8.
Yes, it takes a lot of juggling to get the formatting right, I can imagine. It's not my field. I know nothing about it. I have, you know, I think it's always valuable for writers to do some kind of self-publishing project at some time in their careers, simply because you start to understand just how much work is done behind the scenes by a publisher, and you know, and then you know the process, how long things take, and all the difficulties that arise. So it is, but I really admire the people who do independent publishing, because man, that's a huge job. It's not just the writing, is it? You've got to put your marketing hat on and your designer hat on, and also, you know, not even that, just that, the commercial aspect of it, of just how much money you can afford to spend in order to, you know, get a return on your investment. It's a huge undertaking. It's not my forte, all that extra stuff. But so I do admire the people who do that.
It's funny because the part that's hard for me is obviously talking about myself, which is why I keep freezing up. I don't think it comes out naturally. It's just, so when I actually have to do publicity, like, you know, for a book or a play or whatever, that's when it's most difficult for me. Because then I'm only really talking about myself instead of the two-way conversation like this. It's really hard.
Yeah, I think a lot of creators are quite introverted in the sense that, you know, we don't like to talk about our own work. And it is very personal, isn't it, your work? You know, we do feel strongly about it. It's like a little baby. And while we can take criticism and in the process of improving the work, it is really hard when you've completed the work and you're putting it out there to the world, and anyone can say anything they like. You know, that's their opinion. And it is very hard. It is very hard to publicize yourself and to be kind of a brand. I totally agree. I find that I'm a little bit of an introvert myself, and so I completely understand. I think one of the things that you do, Sherry, is that you promote other people. And by promoting other people, then you're sort of in the mix, if you like. You know, you're talking with other people and you're asking the questions that people want to hear, you know, the answers to. And so in some ways, by promoting other people, I think you automatically are seen and visible. And I think that's kind of sort of how I feel strongly about, you know, publicity. I don't, you know, say buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. But I do a lot of work in the sort of New Zealand literary community, and particularly in the area of speculative fiction. And I'm very proud of that work because to me, I feel like if, you know, New Zealand speculative fiction and science fiction, fantasy, horror, you know, is promoted and on the whole, we get a critical mass, and then, you know, people should know that this is a country with huge talent in that area. You know, we're hosting Worldcon this year in July, August, and we have some amazing filmmakers making science fiction fantasy films. Well, obviously everyone knows about Peter Jackson and Taika Waititi, and you know, but there are numerous incredibly talented filmmakers coming through. We've got amazing, amazing writers. So, you know, I feel like there's a space for critical mass. And, you know, when you promote other people, then, you know, that you're seen to be a spokesperson for that genre, and then you become visible in that way. I mean, without having to say, hey, I wrote this book and you should buy. Because I hate doing that. I just don't feel comfortable. Yeah.
I'm just not a hard sale type person. I wasn't when I was doing sales, and I'm certainly not for my own stuff.
No, but I think you're passionate about, you know, about art and artists and literary arts and film. Those are your passions. And so by engaging in conversation, you promote everybody. And in the same way, people see you as someone who's as the hub of the community. And I think that those are good ways to promote yourself, you know, quietly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I like helping other people. And also, I learn something from every single interview I do.
Oh,
so,
don't we just? Absolutely, yeah.
And I listen to what people are saying. So sometimes people, you know less than me. Sometimes people know more than me. So sometimes they're taking from me. Sometimes I'm taking from them. That's what the conversation's supposed to be.
Well, exactly. That's exactly what a conversation is supposed to be. So, yeah. Oh, it sounds to me like you've got quite an exciting year coming up on the book front. And what about the plays? Because Sherry's Playhouse is still going, running, and it's very active. So what can we expect from Sherry's Playhouse this year?
Okay. Well, Joe Cronus is coming back. I'm really excited about that.
Oh, fantastic. That's such a popular play.
It is. It actually did very well in the downloads. I did not qualify. It was ineligible, but I did mention as an honorable mention when I did my post today because it did very, very well. Dowry did very – no, I didn't mention Joe Cronus, but Dowry and Joe Cronus were the two ones that – but Dowry kind of edged out to Cronus. And I think because it's such a short play, that's why.
Yes, when people can consume it in a small bite, then it's less of an investment perhaps. So, yeah, but still it was an engaging little story and people did enjoy it. So you're bringing the character back or are you
Oh, no, it's Joe.
Redoing
it. Joe, yeah, and it sort of takes off where the last one ended.
Okay, great.
So Nick is in Nick's the guy who plays it. Terrence is in prison, and he escapes. That's about all I can tell you about that part of it. And
okay.
Joe goes after him.
Okay, so but will listeners have to have listened to the first play in order to be able to follow the story, or will they be able to jump right into that new play and just enjoy it as a standalone story?
It's pretty much a standalone, even though the characters are continuing. There are certain characters, not all of them are continuing. Joe, of course, the bad guy, Terrence. Robert, who is Joe's friend adversary, and Drusilla, who had a very tiny part in the last one, who has a much bigger part in this one. Everybody, oh, and Jane Austen is in it again, but she's more like a cameo.
Oh, cool. Oh, that sounds great. Oh, well, I'll look forward to that. Any others coming?
Mary Brooks' play from the Mabel series. She's got a new one that's coming out probably just before the XenoCon. So it'll probably be in June, either June or May, because the convention's in August. I'm going to XenoCon. Yay!
Oh, wow, fantastic. Fantastic. Oh, you're a big fan of Xena. You need to come out to New Zealand sometime and visit me and visit some of those sites and locations. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes. Do you know how many times I have been invited to New Zealand and Australia?
Get on a plane and come, Sherry. We'd love to have you.
It's so hard, but I really do want to come. I do, I do. It's in my bucket list.
Well, okay, get to XenoCon first, and I'm sure that'll be a great event. So it's a three-day convention, is it?
Yeah, it's a three-day convention in August for the 25th anniversary of the show. Lucy's going to be there, Renee's going to be there, Stephen Sears is going to be there, Mary's going to be there.
Do you think that just chatting with Sherry will be able to do some interviews while you're there? Oh, that would be exciting.
Yeah, I could do that.
What?
I'd have to carry my laptop.
Oh, that would be cool. Let's see if you can set that up, Sherry. That would be so exciting.
Hello? Lee has accidentally dropped out in the middle of a sentence. Just a short musical interlude while she reconnects.
Convention and that's a bit annoying. Anyway, we're back online.
Oi. So we were just talking about all the people are going to be there, and it's the 25th anniversary, and Mary has Mary Brooks has edited a book about how the fans of Xena were affected by Xena. That's what the interview that won the chatty was about, was Stephen Sears and me. It's all about, and it has artwork by fans, it has stories of how people's lives were changed by Xena and fan fiction and things like that. It's going to be a great book. It'll come out, I think she said it's going to come out simultaneously as the convention. So,
oh, wow, fantastic. Yeah, it's really interesting. It is interesting that 25 years on, certain brands have such an impact on generations and cohorts of people. I mean, particularly that whole feminist movement around the Xena stories and women's strength and leadership and that kind of thing. So I think, you know, that's obviously it was timely for the era, and you know, and I think, you know, when you look at science fiction and fantasy, what a huge role it has in shaping our community and our world, and also just speculative fiction, you know, when you look into the future. And, you know, I've said this before on your show, Sherry, you know, the old Maxwell Smart with his Jew phone, you know, who, and it was funny, and, you know, it was like, oh, that's in the future. And now we all carry our phones around. So it's really quite predictive. And I think, you know, not predictive, but, you know, that's the whole word speculative, isn't it? We like to test out what might happen. And I think, you know, interestingly now, there's this huge move towards climate change fiction and dystopian fiction. You know, when you see what's awfully, you know, the dreadful things that are happening in Australia at the moment with these horrible forest fires. So people are really looking. I mean, look, I live in New Zealand, Sherry, and I live 2,000 miles away from these forest fires in Australia. And there have been days here in New Zealand where we have, in my town, where we have not seen the sun, where there's just this smoke haze going over the sky, and we have not, well, if we've seen the sun, it's this red-rimmed, you know, thing in this grey, gold kind of very weird haze. And so I think there is, you know, we're a product of our environment, but we, our writing sort of reflects our fears. So I think it's really interesting, you know, that, you know, in that period where you're talking about Xena and how those things were, you know, those elements of women's empowerment were very important, and now we're seeing a move towards climate change fiction. And so the science fiction fantasy movement is very important in shaping how society, you know, reflects back and sees things.
Yes, I mean, and I have friends from both Xena and from Miss Fisher that are in Australia, and I just want to send my love to them.
Gosh, don't just send your love. Everyone needs to send $5 or $10 or whatever they can afford to help those firefighters. Oh my goodness, it is such a. I know there are a lot of people doing some wonderful work, but, you know, any help that they can get, there are, you know, it's just tragic, and it's so scary for our friends over there. Absolutely terrifying.
I know.
So,
and I worry.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know that there are firefighters from Los Angeles and here in San Diego that went over to help, but and also from New Zealand too, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. They're our neighbours. They're our closest neighbours, and definitely we have the government sent a number of firefighters over there. But it is just the extent of it, and the you know, I can't even imagine a half a billion animals. It's just so tragic.
No, that makes
sense.
So
tragic.
And especially since
yeah.
the animals in Australia and New Zealand are so unique. Just think of the loss of those unique animals. It's just disgusting and tragic, and
it is very sad. So yes,
yeah,
so I think we're going to see, you know, in terms of literature and writing, we're going to see some stories that really reflect the fears and the concerns that we all have facing, you know, the kinds of climatic calamities that we're seeing, you know, brought to bear now. And so yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of things come out of this decade.
I agree.
Writing. So
we had a huge discussion about the 20s online, and people were saying, "Oh, it's the new 1920s." I go, you do realize the 1920s came from what was happening at the time. This will be a different 20s.
They were in the aftermath of a world war, and so I guess, yeah. So, you know, there was always, every era, there's something, isn't there? There was the depression, those depression years, and so, you know, I think every time, every new decade has its own challenges, but I certainly think that this decade is shaping up to be quite an eventful one, yeah.
But, yeah, And as a writer, everything seeps into you. You can't help it. Like we were discussing before the show that when I was doing Joe Cronus 2, a lot of, it got a lot darker than I think I've ever written.
What do you think that was, Sherry? You know, what was happening in your life at the time? You know, why do you think that you went darker, even though writing dark fiction and stories is really not your thing? You tend to like a sort of more, you know, feel-good type of story or, you know, kind of complex plot. But what made you write, because, you know, I love that you're coming over to the dark side because you know I write horror. But I'm just wondering what was it that made you, you know, delve into that dark side. Have you thought about it?
Yeah. Well, every once in a while I do get into that. I do it more in fan fiction than I do it in my actual book writing. I think, well, I wasn't feeling good when I was writing it. That doesn't help.
Okay, yeah, right. Yeah.
And I had a lot of emotional on me, and also what was going on in my country. I don't want to go into politics, but a lot of what's going on in my country affected me. And it's not horror. I don't want to give that impression. It's not horror, but it's just dark. It's more like a Twilight Zone than a horror. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, though, that when you're coming from a bit of a dark spot in your life, then it's often good to explore those themes and because they're a way of creating some distance between you, your personal life, and reality, and then you can explore it in a way that's safe. But also, the actual act of being creative can be very uplifting. Don't you agree?
Yes. Yeah, and actually,
so it can kind of pull you out of that dark place sometimes. So I think that there's merit in that.
It's just like a diary when you're really upset and things are not going. Or the other thing I express myself through is my poetry. My poetry sounds like I'm suicidal, which I am not. Because whenever I'm upset, when I lost my dad, I wrote poetry. When I lost my mom, I wrote poetry. When I lost my fiance, I wrote poetry. It's just very, my darkest, deepest, most hard to express emotions go into my poetry.
Yeah, I think that poetry is a very personal, personal form of writing. But I do think that, you know, this is something that really interests me myself, Sherry, is this idea of creativity and well-being. And particularly amongst sort of horror and dark fiction writers, you know, I suffer from anxiety and depression myself. So I've looked at exploring these ideas. And if you look at our iconic, you know, horror writers, you know, Stephen King and, you know, even right back Mary Shelley and various writers like that, you know, there's a very, very strong thread of, you know, depression and substance abuse and various mental health issues related, connected with those writers. And so you have to ask the question, you know, which comes first, the horror or the mental illness? I mean, not saying that all people who write dark fiction have mental illness, but I do believe that there is a real space for using dark fiction to kind of confront those horrors and things that we fear, and examine them in a way that gives us a little bit of distance and clarity. And the actual act of doing that can also bring you out of that space. And so there's real value in it. And I know in New Zealand, for example, that our recent budget is related to creativity and well-being. I'm not wanting to talk about politics or anything, but there is a movement here in New Zealand, at least, of looking at that role of creativity in productivity and also the whole well-being of a community. So this is an area I'm really excited about. I just heard this morning that Ginger Nuts of Horror, which is a horror blog site run by Jim McLeod, is focusing on mental health awareness and horror writing all year this year, so he'll be a series of blogs, so I'm looking forward to reading that. And I've also been talking with my publisher, and secret thing coming out next year, so watch a space. I'm looking at doing a project that looks particularly at anxiety and horror, and I'm also involved in a project in New Zealand, a film project actually, an anthology film project based on a series of essays called The Headlands Project, News Stories of Anxiety. And so I think we've got 40 writers and filmmakers working together to make short films based around that essay collection. So I've been paired up with a young filmmaker named Isaiah Tor, fantastically talented young man, and we'll be doing a children's book on short film horror fantasy based on my essay. So I'm really, really excited to have that project coming on this year. So that's that area is something that I'm particularly interested in, and I'm excited to see how that's going to come to fruition over the next year.
It's funny because it's just like, I was trying to explain, one of the reasons I do a podcast is because I'm really shy. I am. And people don't understand that. How can you be an actress? How can you be a writer? How can you do interviews if you're shy? Easy. Because a lot of people, I did an episode of Golden Girls, and one of the things that shocked me was how completely opposite of my vision of her she was. Bea Arthur was a complete introvert. I mean, deathly shy. The only, other leads and the director, she was polite, but she was not, she would just, and I found out from the AD, she's shy. She's scared to death. The only people she wasn't really shy of were children. When the children came to the set, she loved that.
Oh, how interesting.
Isn't that interesting? A lot of very famous people are like that, complete introverts. You wouldn't ever know it, because when you see Bea Arthur, she was just full-on, incredibly out there, loud. Another person who was like that, I never met her, my mom met her, was Martha Ray. She saw her at a nightclub, and she very politely asked for her autograph. And she goes, so quietly, my mother couldn't hardly hear her. She goes, "Of course, dear." And she said, "God bless." And she handed her the thing. It was so quiet, my mom could barely hear her. She was known as the mouse. just because
you're... Isn't that interesting?
You're an extrovert. It's just not a given.
No, and I think the thing is, we never know what other people are dealing with, you know. And, you know, one of the things, of course, and this is, I don't know about the film industry, but certainly in the writing industry, it is very hard to make a living as a writer. You know, it is very hard. You know, I think there's a meme going on around at the moment on social media about, that's come out after the film about Little Women film, the new version by I've forgotten the fabulous woman director. Anyway, the meme is that, you know, that Louise May Alcott got $100. Her character the character Joe got $100 for writing a short story. And the crazy thing is that now, in the modern era, $100 is still what you get for writing a short story, you know. So 100 years on, or more than 100 years on, you know, nothing has changed. And so it is very, very precarious being a writer. And while it is a hugely, hugely rewarding profession, it is very precarious in terms of, you know, your everyday life. And I think that creates a lot of anxiety and you know, so you're small, you feel small, you know, it's not, it's you, you, it's a big world and it's really hard to make a, get a footing. So I can, you can understand that sort of, perhaps there is a little more of anxiety and pressure on this particular group because, and you know, there might be plenty of money in film, but it's not the writers necessarily who are making those big amounts of money. And so you know, most writers are really struggling. So
I think it's just like acting. You know, actors, 90% of SAG is not working. 90%.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And I think
yeah.
Worse for the Writers Guild. Maybe it's like 95% aren't working. I mean, people.
It's a very
difficult business. And when you're a regular writer, whether you're going with a publisher or self-publishing. You know, and you were talking about the $100 for the, because I do articles and stuff, and that's about how much I make.
Yeah, and those things take a lot of time to perfect. Yeah, yeah.
If you think about inflation, she was making good money. We're not.
Yeah, no, I kind of envy her. Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is the thing, and I don't think people are aware. You know, you see these programs on, you know, television, and they have these perceptions of, you have this perception of writers with these glamorous lives, and, you know, actually, it's not like that at all, and most of us are, you know, okay, we don't always say we're doing terribly, but it is a struggle. It really is a struggle. So, those opportunities are quite a few and far between. So, so I think that probably does contribute to the sort of that idea of darkness that's coming. You know, I think a lot of stories that we're seeing coming out now are a little darker, don't you think? I mean, I'm looking at my Netflix streaming and I'm thinking, oh, goodness, there's another, well, it's great for me, but, you know, there is another dark story coming along. So I think at the moment we're really, you know, society is interested in exploring those ideas.
The space invasion period in the 50s, the reason everybody was doing that was because of the Cold War, and they were scared of death.
Absolutely.
That
And the Godzilla movement came out of that too, you know. You remember that whole, you know, Japanese sort of kaiju idea of urbanization and the Cold War again, radioactivity. And so, yeah, so we definitely see these sort of cycles in fiction. I'm excited. I'm also very frightened, but I'm excited to see what's going to come, I think. And there are sometimes some great solutions, or at least opportunities for discussion and conversation, which can open, you know, open us up to better solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting thought, and if we look back at history, it's always been that way. Writing always reflects the time.
Sure does. Oh yes,
it's
certainly
the way
does.
It is. You know, World War II, the writing, the movies during the actual war were always happy, pappy, sappy. But the reason why was they weren't happy, pappy, sappy people. They were going through hell. I mean, almost every single country in the world was going through absolute hell. That's why the MGM musicals were outselling any other movie, because people wanted that little tiny bit of color in their life.
Yes, isn't that interesting? Yeah. Yeah, totally.
We've come to the part of the show, and we were talking about this earlier, where, you know, maybe you want to talk about your book.
Oh, my book. Well, I'm really excited to say that Dan Raybatz and I have finished the last book in our Path of Ra series. It's called Blood of the Sun. It's standalone, so anyone will be able to read it. It'll be coming out sometime next year, I think probably towards July, August. It's with the publisher now, and my editor has come back and said it is a masterpiece, so we're very excited about that.
Woo-hoo!
We're really proud of it. Really, really proud of it. I think it's the best one yet. So really thrilled. Kind of sad to be at the end of that collaboration with Dan, because we've brought the story full circle. But really pleased with the piece of work, and lovely. We're really thrilled to have the New Zealand context. We finish we finished the story on a volcano in Auckland. And so, it actually, to be honest, it was quite a hard story to write because we had written sort of a fictional massacre into the story. And New Zealand has really not had one until we were writing the story, and then we had one. We had this dreadful, dreadful mosque killings in March of last year, and so it was quite a difficult time for us to write that story because we'd sort of it was like we'd conjured up this thing, and of course we didn't. But you know, we were just so confident that that was never happening in New Zealand, and then it did. So it really shocked us, and so it was quite an experience. We were really very, very happy at the way the story turned out in the end. And so, but it was a process, as you can imagine. So there's that, and I have a collection coming out. It's not been announced yet, so I probably have to be quite a little bit quiet and announcing it to the world here. But I have a collection of short stories.
Announcement.
yeah, exactly. I'm, you know, so much for being discreet. But I have a collection coming out with of an Australian publisher. I'm very excited about. And it's a small collection of my stories. This is the first collection I've ever put out, so I'm very pleased about that. And I'm also working with, at the moment, with my with an Australian colleague, Jean Flynn, and we're putting together with an absolute stellar lineup. We're putting together a collection of Asian horror fiction by Asian women writers writing in English. So that's a little bit different. So I'm really excited about that. The lineup is just, you know, we've got Rena Mason and Angela Yuriko Smith. We've got Christina Singh, the Bram Stoker Award-winning poet. We've got Rinj Peko, Nadia Bulkin. Oh my goodness! Gabriella Lee. I'll probably forget someone, but I'm just so excited about the caliber of the writers in this little collection. And so that's coming, and that will be out sometime, probably mid to end of this next year. The writers are still writing. So very excited about that. I've already seen the cover, which was done by Greg Chapman, who's an Australian horror fiction writer and artist. And so it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. So those are my big projects for this year, and in terms of writing myself, I'm sort of working on something. What book I might be writing next. So, I have a number of projects that I should be writing, but you know how it is when you should be doing something, you automatically think, well, maybe I should be I'll do something else as well. So, at the moment, my actual sort of novel project is kind of it's on hold and shifting, drifting until I quite work out where I want to go. So in the meantime, I think I've got plenty to go on with. I've got about 6 mentees on the go. So, I do quite a lot of work trying to put some pay it forward and, give back to the community that's given so much to me. So I have a number of mentees both in New Zealand and overseas. So it's exciting to see what they're doing. I kind of feel like I've got a little bit of influence and a little bit of, you know, input into these wonderful stories that are coming from my mentees. So I'm excited to see what's going on there. And I'm still involved in New Zealand writers, which is, you know, developing and nurturing our newest novelists and writers coming through the New Zealand secondary school system. So that is one of the most rewarding things that I do, and I've been doing that a decade now. And so I'm continuing that work as well. So, yeah, it's, you know, I said I would do a little less, but it doesn't look like I
It doesn't sound like it.
So ask me again maybe later in the year, Sherry, how I'm doing, and if I'm tearing my hair out, you'll know why, because my eyes are bigger than my stomach, and I always want to do more, and you've only got so much time.
I know. The thing is that people don't understand, because I do these shows, that I'm also a writer, so I have to have my writing time. And when I got to the point where I was like, had all these things that I needed to get out this year, I actually, like, said, what the heck am I going to... So I had the book fair, and I had the reprise of Joe Cronus in December, because I actually need a quiet time to write.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we just need more hours in the day. And, you know, sleep is really overrated, Cherry. Come on. Really, it is.
And I have a very demanding yeah. kid who wants to be fed when she's going to be fed. She wants us to get up at the time she wants us to get up. She wants to play even though we want to go to bed. You know, it's like having a...
Yes, well, I have a little dog. She's a Jack Russell Shih Tzu, and she's lovely at keeping me grounded. Actually, you know, she likes to sort of, it's very interesting. She likes to jump up on my chair, on my, you know, office chair, and sit in the crook of my back, you know, in the small of my back, and she sort of wiggles her way in there and sort of pushes me towards the front of the chair and then sits in that little warm space in the middle of my back. And every now and again, she'll sort of reach around and put her face on my lap and say, well, come on, pat me. but it is, it's a lovely interruption. She's really rather lovely. And it's very good at she's very good at grounding me.
I think that's what pets do. They ground us. They remind
us
that there's more to life than, you know, just our work.
Yeah, that's right. That's totally true. So I have a few conferences I'm going to this year as well.
I was going to ask you next. What events? What's coming up?
I'm heading off to I'm heading off to the States today to see my publisher, so I'm excited about that. And but I'm off to the UK to StokerCon in April, around Easter time. No, it's after Easter, I think. It's the 18th of April, around that time. And that's being run by Maria Reagan and Paul Kane. Both incredible horror writers themselves, and they're the chairs of husband wife team of the StokerCon conference that'll be held out of Scarborough, and I'm going to go up and have a look at Dracula's Whitby. So there's a little tour, and I'm going on that, and so I'm very excited about that. That'll be really special. And then I have a few New Zealand conferences coming up where I've been asked to speak, so I'm looking forward to that. It's always nice to do conferences at home. And then this year, of course, we've got WorldCon, Con Zealand, which is being held here in New Zealand, in Wellington, obviously the place of Weta Workshop and, Wizard's Guide to Wellington. So that'll be really exciting, and a lot of my science fiction, fantasy, and horror friends are coming down to New Zealand for that. So yeah, so there's a lot happening this year. It's a very big year for speculative fiction, that's for sure.
That's really cool. Well, you're a busy girl. I don't know how you do it all.
Yeah, I know. I said I was going to do less, didn't I? I'm pretty sure I said I was going to do less this year, but somehow already we're 1 week in and it's not shaping up to be less.
No, I thought other than going to the XenaCon, that was the only thing planned, and my books. Those were the only thing planned. And all those other stuff.
Yeah, only things planned, but they're just, that you say that, but it's still a lot of work, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's like, and I went to think on the, I have the things that I'm, other articles that I'm writing, and I got, I got my shows, and it just, yeah, and I don't have a lot of time as much as I'd like.
Yeah, so why do we do this, Cherry?
Well,
because just so fun, isn't it? It is so, I mean, it is lots of work, and sometimes it's a struggle, but, you know, the people are incredible, and it is so fun to be part of the creative industry.
I'm really proud of my show, actually, because it's very diverse.
Well, you should be. You should be, absolutely.
I mean, really, my only criteria is that you're creative. I don't care what you do.
Well, I tell you what, though. I mean, I don't know if everybody knows who's listening that Sherry has a Patreon page, and what she does here, the work she does with chatting with Sherry is, you know, she does this for free, and so people should join up to your Patreon page. There's lots of free content. You often give stories and interviews and bits and pieces just for patrons. So, you know, maybe you should put that link up, Sherry, at the beginning of the decade and see if you can get some supporters, because it is. You do a great job for creatives and promoting other creatives, but it's also lovely to be able to, you know, listen to your show and listen to people that you wouldn't otherwise hear from. And it's wonderful to have these conversations going on and get all these different perspectives on, you know, popular media and stories, and which do reflect our society. So, yeah, everyone who's listening, if you haven't already, whip in. You know, you only have to give $1 a month or even less. So whip in and have a look at Sherry's Patreon page, and I can Patreon. Anyway, and I can recommend it because I am a patron, and I do
mm-hmm.
enjoy getting that extra content. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, in fact, Stephen Sears gave like 2 really cool videos. That's only for patrons.
Yes. So yeah, exactly. So sometimes you can get that little bit extra, you know. So. I think it's worth it. And I think it's always lovely for people to support, you know, creatives. It is difficult. I don't have a page myself, but there are a number of my colleagues keep pages and put out special content. And, you know, it's lovely to see people support those creatives because, you know, we all love story. We all, you know, listen to stories, watch stories on the television, you know, film, music. It's all part and partial to how we, you know, how we reflect on our lives. And I think it's important to support those creators because it is a very difficult industry to make a living.
It is. Thank you very much, Lee. I really appreciate it.
That's all right. No, we appreciate the work you do for us.
Thank you. For yourself, what is your website, your, you know, Facebook, all the social media, so people will know how to say hi?
Yeah, just they can find me on Twitter, Lee Murray Writer, at Lee Murray Writer, or on Facebook. Just look me up, Lee Murray or Lee Murray Author. And I'm based in New Zealand, so I'm pretty much the only one down here that's Lee Murray. And otherwise, my website is leemurray.info.
You're the only one in the whole country of New Zealand with the last name Murray?
No, I'm just the only Lee Murray author, Lee Murray. So you'll be able to find me. That's not, you know, it's okay. I think if I Google my name, I get Lee Murray the boxer who's gone to prison. So I'm usually about second or third down. So don't mix me up with him. But, yeah, there's just one Lee Murray writer, I think, down here. So that's a bit of an advantage. We're a small place.
Do you have Instagram?
Yeah, but I'm very hopeless at it. I'm going to try a bit harder this year. That should be my New Year's resolution, shouldn't it? To try a bit harder with Instagram.
Yeah, it's not that easy, but I mean, because you have to use your cell phone to put your pictures up, which is not the easiest.
Yeah,
thing.
I do tend to post quite a few pictures, so I should get. You're right, Cherry. I should try a bit harder. My children keep saying try a bit harder with that, Mum. So, yes, I will do my best to improve my visibility on Instagram. We'll do that. Ask me next time how I'm getting on.
I was a positive influence on Lee Murray today.
Well, that hasn't happened yet, honey.
I know. I just always wanted to say that. Anyway, thank you, Lee, for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, my God, is it finished already? Oh, it goes so fast.
My love, you've talked an hour.
It's wonderful to come on your show. Thank you very much for inviting me. I always love it. And I hope, look, let's hope that this year is a good one, and all the best for a fantastic year, Sherry. It sounds like you've just got an incredible amount of work coming up. So I wish you all the very best, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. You too. Happy New Year to you and your family.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.